Welcome into a special trade deadline edition of Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Palillo and at Josh Jordan 975. And in between our episodes here, you can read their blogs covering the Astros, Texans, and Rockets over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, in a world of sequels, Happy Gilmore 2, Spaceballs 2, and The Naked Gun, the Houston Astros have just produced their own. We'll talk about the much needed glow up Dana Brown just gave this roster. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. This Astros season has been a compelling story of against all odds performances, and you can't tell a good story without a good twist. And boy, did we get one. I can safely say this wasn't on anyone's radar, but Ramon Urias, Jesus Sanchez, what a pair of moves. Wow. Did I miss anything? Oh yeah. Carlos freaking Correa returns to the Houston Astros. Boys, let's get right into it. We start with you, Charlie. Your reaction to Carlos rejoining the Astros.
Well, you mentioned sequels. What are they up to, like Fast and the Furious 23, whatever they keep changing the name to? What an afternoon it was leading to the 5 o'clock deadline. Of course, the Astros wind up in the thick of it with Carlos Correa donning number one for a second time around. And he'll be on the field with Alex Bregman in Boston over the weekend. Life is strange brew sometimes. Wow, this is a very mixed and complicated bag for those who've been damning Jim Crane as a miser. Well, they were in the top seven or eight in payroll before this flurry of moves, which blows them through the first CBT threshold. Now, I'm not saying Crane should be getting a parade for this. If they're $10 million over, the tax penalty will be $3 million. Small change in a multi-billion dollar enterprise does have the ramifications of next year. They'll be a 50% tax-paying team if they go over again. But for 2025, they obviously got better. The thing is, by 2025 play, Carlos Correa is the worst player the Astros picked up. Urias has been better this season. Sanchez has been better this season. Correa has been a bad player so far in 2025. So the Astros are betting a lot. And Dana Brown talked about it in his post-deadline press availability. They think Correa will be rejuvenated, re-energized, and a two-way street, that the Astros get a B12 boost, an adrenaline shot of Correa and all of his past success here, regular season and postseason. That's good in theory. That it comes in practice is important. Again, Correa's been a bad player this year, barely over 700 OPS. Power's taken a nosedive, seven home runs and near 350 at-bats. Defensive metrics. Whoosh. Now, we won't be playing shortstop here with Jeremy Pena rejoining the Astros over the weekend as well. Right? That's their biggest addition, getting Pena back in the lineup. So it's absolutely exciting and brings back all the warm and fuzzies of days past. Remember, the Astros immediately won the World Series after Correa left. So it's not like he is the salvation, but even this version of Correa, who's never played third base, right? So he's going to adapt on the fly. I think he's athletic enough. Obviously, he has the hands and the arm strength. But there will be some adjustment to the reaction time at third base. But this means no more big league playing time for Shea Whitcomb and Zach Short. Guillorme's already been off the roster. John Singleton off the roster. They added three bona fide big leaguers on deadline afternoon. Well, Arias Tuesday and then the two other, or Wednesday and then the two other guys on Thursday.
Man, if you're an Astros fan, days don't get much better than this. Carlos Correa, Dana Brown, knocking it out of the park, baby. A-plus trade deadline, in my opinion. Jim Crane opening up the checkbook from the top rope. Nobody saw that coming. I cannot be more excited. Charlie, talk about hadn't played a lot of third base for Correa. Well, he did in the World Baseball Classic. He slid over to third with Lindor playing shortstop. He was actually really effective. I think that was back in 2017. And Correa talked about how this transition to third base would be an eventual part in his career process and that he's actually kind of looking forward to it because he's not going to have to spend as much time on defense, working on maintaining that high-level production defensively at shortstop. He's going to be at third base now. He can focus more on his offense, something that he enjoyed doing back when he was playing third base years ago. Let's jump to now, man. I'm just so excited. This is why I wanted Bregman to stay. Because I wanted that infield to be shored up on the left side especially. But this is so much better. Jim Crane, you won over so many fans today. Instead of 3 years, $120 million of Bregman to play third base, you're going to get starting next year, 3 years of Correa at about $66 million to play third base. Just what a difference. You're getting him for about half the price of Bregman. And I know you said that Correa has not been that good this year, Charlie, and you're right. But last year, OPS over 900, just absolutely spectacular. And over the last 30 days, Correa has really taken off. His stats are pretty darn good. So I feel fantastic about this deal. I know we have a lot of other guys to get to, but those are my initial opinions there that I just love it. It's so exciting. I think this is going to reinvigorate Altuve. I think this is going to get everybody going, and it kind of solves an issue. I think you worry about 2026 and 2026. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have a lot of options. They'll have some trade possibilities. Maybe you can move some guys to different positions. But if Christian Walker's terrible again through halfway through the year next year, you might be able to move Paredes over there or somebody else. You have some options, and you think like, oh, the Astros wouldn't eat that contract. Well, they ate Abreu's after a year and a half. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Walker has been heating up over the past couple weeks. But overall, if you're an Astros fan, I think you have to be really excited that Jim Crane is serious about winning this year.
He's always been serious about winning, and they're 4.5 games in first place going into the weekend in Boston. So it's not like, oh, they were just hoping to get by. But they throw all in, if that's what you want to call it. The money does matter, though. This Correa is not worth $22 million per season, so he better pick it up. And Josh, you mentioned he was spectacular last season until he missed 2 months injured. Attendance is part of the grade. Correa has been a mediocre player 4 of the last 8 seasons, counting this one. And in 2 of the good ones, he missed at least 2 months injured, right? Over those 2 seasons, he played 161 games. Combined, right? So 2 of his 4 good seasons, he played 1 season worth of baseball. So this is not an absolute no-brainer, smashing success. There's a plan, certainly for 2025, but going beyond, if there was any possibility that they'd get into the bidding to retain Framber Valdez, faint as it may have been, that's off the table. So their rotation for next year is Hunter Brown and a big bag of not much, a whole bunch of cross your fingers and question marks and guys coming off injury. And hey, Lance McCullers has 1 more year on his contract. That can be worried about then. But as Dana Brown says, he looks about the now and the future. Correa at $22 million is complicating for their roster construct going forward. Paredes at first base is a possibility. He probably won't be a Christian Walker level defender at first base. You know, is Altuve going to go back to second base at 36 years old? It's interesting. So while Correa, of course, is the overwhelming headline, as I said, he's the worst player in 2025 of the 3 that they acquired. Jesus Sanchez, a left-handed bat with some power, he will play primarily left field, meaning Altuve is going to play at least job split now, probably more than half his time at second base the rest of the way. You make the trade-offs there. But Sanchez means no more at-bats for Cooper Hummel. Hey, Taylor Trammell has exceeded any reasonable expectation over the last couple of weeks. Chaz McCormick, step aside as the Astros will settle on the roster. And with the Correa addition, Urias actually is surplus, right? They have Dubon as the utility guy. Well, now they have Urias in case of other injury, right? Dubon, another guy who's been a better player so far this season than Carlos Correa. So I'm fascinated to see how Carlos amps it up, and, you know, with Correa time and all that. I'm sure Mrs. Correa is pumped, right? All her family's from Texas, and Correa got all his money and put in 3.5 seasons in Minnesota. Well, with the Twins selling everything that wasn't tied down before the deadline and Correa having the no trade clause, he could steer it back. And I have to say, if I'm the Twins, I'd have said we'll take nothing rather than Matt Mikulski, a 26-year-old minor league free agent the Astros signed in the offseason with a career ERA in the minors of over 660. Have a little pride, Minnesota. If it's a straight salary dump, save all the money you can. But you're taking Matt Mikulski? Is that his name?
Going to the Correa health questions, the bright side is at least Carlos gets to come back and work with Houston's stellar medical staff. Now, Harold Reynolds was on MLB Network, and I think he was trying to create some drama where there really isn't.
It was laughable.
He was questioning about...
Who plays short?
Yeah, exactly. Whether Correa's intentions...
Settle down, Harold.
Yes.
There's no question about it. When Derek Jeter was entrenched as the Yankees shortstop... and they traded for Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod was the much better defender than Derek Jeter. Well, A-Rod was going to third because Derek Jeter, the Prince of New York and all that. Soon-to-be 31-year-old Carlos Correa, I mentioned his defensive metrics fell off sharply this season. Jeremy Peña, 3 years younger, right? They share the same birthday in September. Jeremy Peña's the better shortstop, unless he has post-fractured rib complications as he rejoins here. And as you mentioned, right, Correa's embracing the idea of moving to third, a little bit less taxing position physically. So I enjoy Harold Reynolds, a very affable guy, but he's detached from reality on this one.
Yeah, and I think it overlooks the big point, which was the fact that Carlos had already agreed to play third base when he signed his contract with the Mets that he eventually failed the physical on. So this is a move that Carlos has already considered prior for the right situation. Clearly, this is the right situation. There's no way that a guy that he mentored personally himself and groomed for that position, is he going to usurp that position because he wants to play short. I think he looks at this as an opportunity to play a little bit less, have a little bit less stress on the defensive side of the ball, and hope that that results into higher productivity with the bat in his hands. And that's what I'm excited most about is with Carlos Correa. I mean, we know the cannon of an arm that the guy possesses. We know that he's going to be able to play a very competent third base moving over from short to third. There probably will be some adjustment, but this guy is a great defensive player. He shores up the defensive front line for this team in a way that we just didn't really see possible while also adding offense. I'm just excited about the intangibles. You know, it's the clutch performances. It's you know, the knack for the big moments and the leadership, getting back one of those big voices that they had lost in free agency. Obviously, a lot of questions about the makeup of this team right now. There was another potential deal that was discussed. It was seemingly very serious to try to bring in Dylan Cease. Dana Brown said the asking price was just much too high for starting pitching. So they are relying on, especially dealing Gusto away, they're relying on getting their guys back. Do you think that they have enough pitching? Do you guys trust that getting guys back from the IL will be enough to stabilize or solidify the rotation?
Really quick on the defense, Ramon Urias was the American League Gold Glove third baseman in 2022. He has defensive chops. On the pitching, it's we want to go hunting for four-leaf clover and finding rabbit's feet. But Arrigetti's close. Javier is close. Javier had another very poor control outing for Sugarland in 3 1/3, walking four guys and giving up hits and runs. So just because they're back doesn't mean they're going to be studs. But that's the dice roll. Gusto just isn't good enough to say, oh, you can't part with him for Sanchez. Cease would have been fascinating. I just didn't see what the Astros could possibly have offered unless it was Bryce Matthews and or Walker Yannick, two first-round draft picks of the last 3 years involved in the trade. Cease has super elite stuff, and we saw what the Astros did tweaking Kikuchi last season. But in the end, the two didn't tango, and heaven knows that A.J. Preller with the Padres just loves to deal like no other. But that one didn't work out. So Fromber, Hunter Brown, Colt Gordon, and the injured guys coming back. Right, we even heard boo on Brandon Walter. That's pretty ominous. McCullers from his blister, even with back. I mean, to what extent do you want to hope that he'll pitch well? So they'll be stretching the rubber band on that rotation. They also would have liked, I think, to add one more right-handed power arm for the bullpen, but also that market got too rich for their blood, plus the poor prospect pool from which they had to deal. I mean, the Yankees added two closers. The Rangers added starter and reliever. And, of course, the spark to the deadline, at least where the American League West was concerned, the Mariners first getting Josh Naylor. Then they add Eugenio Suarez. So all three teams in the hunt make major moves. Well, the Astros have a 4.5 game head start going to the weekend for this final 1/3 sprint finishing kick of the season.
You mentioned Urias. I kind of wonder with him, if he wasn't traded for the day prior that they got Correa, would they still have made the move? Just kind of a lot of similarities to Dubon. And I know Dubon's making about $5 million this year, and then he's up for arbitration again next year. I wonder if there's a thought that maybe he could be a cheaper Dubon replacement next year. I wonder if that could be a possibility, Charlie. The thing I really like about all these deals is that you got to keep pretty much all the talent that you didn't want to let go of, right? We hear Jacob Melton and Bryce Matthews, and we talk about all the time that the Astros farm system, this gives me a little bit of confidence that, you know, maybe after another draft, and you didn't give up really much this year, maybe you're not one of the very worst farm systems in baseball anymore. Maybe they're starting to dig out of this a little bit, and it didn't cost you much off the big league roster either. Just quickly back to you're talking about Correa being clutch, brand. You're right. 860 career OPS in the postseason. You have to be thrilled about that. I'm also, like Sanchez, I haven't gotten to him yet. I really like this deal here. It made me think of, he's not going to be Michael Brantley, but you need somebody that can hit from the left side of the plate and that has a chance of getting a base hit for you in a big moment. And that somebody that can also play some defense. I looked at his Baseball Savant. He's also got a good arm. So I think this is a great, I really feel like they kind of fleeced the Marlins in this deal.
You know, earlier this season, we saw Hector Neris get DFA'd and then Houston reacquires him, brings him back into the fold. And he's been very productive for them out of the bullpen. We got news on Thursday, Ryan Pressly released as well. What do you guys think about possibly bringing Ryan back into the fold and whether you'd want to see that or not?
I almost expect it to happen. I mean, Caleb Ort's kind of expendable and waiting on Sean Dubin to get back. Pressly's had an interesting season. He had one, oh my God, outing early on where he gave up 8 earned runs without recording an out, which messes up your ERA kind of for the season when you're a relief pitcher in limited innings. Then over a month and a half stretch, 25 outings, his earned run average was below 1. Well, out of the All-Star break, disaster. 5 outings, 5 innings pitched, 4 home runs allowed, and 4 walks. I mean, over the All-Star break, was he slamming his arm against walls somewhere and he's lost it all? And I mean, he was phenomenal for a month and a half, and the last week and a half, it all went to pot for him. I would expect the Astros, unless their scouting reports say he's totally cooked, they're paying him $5.5 million this year anyway.
A good point. I mean, why not kick the tires? Look, I'm with you, Charlie. Your stats were even worse, but I looked it up real quick. He's given up a run in 4 of his last 5 appearances. Not exactly ideal for a closer. However, you're right. With Ort and some of the other guys they've been bringing up, and Contreras, and they've been bringing up a lot of different guys. Why not take a shot on Pressly? Unless your scouting department just tells you it's not going to work, but why not get the band back together? It's a feel-good story. We know all the chemistry is going to be good, but I don't have a lot of confidence in Pressly just because he's getting older and he has struggled recently. But if there's any pitching department that could get him right, I think they're right here in Houston, Texas.
If he's not hurt, I would take him and release Neris. If for some reason I want to keep Ort because he's cheap and controllable beyond this year.
I'd do the opposite. I'd get rid of Ort and keep Neris. I want that postseason experience if we're going all in like this.
Charlie, you mentioned moves from Seattle and Texas. Obviously, the Eugenio Suarez move was one of the big headlines from the week. I want to get your opinion on how you think this team stacks up now to the Mariners and Rangers post-deadline. And then let's take a step even further back. Let's ask the big question here, which is, is this a World Series contender?
Oh, there's no question it's a World Series contender. They're 4.5 games in first place. They're right in the thicket with the Blue Jays and Tigers to avoid the 2 out of 3 in the first round. Of course, the flip side of the coin is they could free fall out of the playoffs. They're not 14.5 games in front. They're 4.5 in front. I think they needed additions, or Seattle would have had the better roster the rest of the way. I think these teams are pretty even now. The Rangers, other than Corey Seager, are enough bats going to step up to support their pitching, which has been supreme, both starting and best bullpen in the American League this year. But the offense has dragged them down. Rangers and Mariners playing 4 games this weekend. Does one of them take 3 out of 4 and hence loom as the primary Astros challenger heading toward the last 6 weeks as we get into August this weekend? So I think the Astros, with all the injuries and the concerns still 3, 4, 5 in their starting rotation, they remain the favorite. I think the 4.5 game head start, as I called it earlier, are they 90% to win this division? I don't think so, with 2 teams capable of reeling them in. But if it's Astros or Mariners or Astros or Rangers, I'll go with the power of incumbency and been there, done that time and time and time again.
Yeah, give me the Astros, baby. Just the experience, what we've seen from the Mariners. Brandon, I'm with you. I think maybe the Rangers scare me a little bit more than Seattle, but they've won all year with elite pitching, and I think the pitching could actually improve. I know the bullpen's just been at an unreal level. It's hard to believe that could be maintained, but so far it's been pretty damn good in the starting pitching. So all that's still there, and you got guys coming back. And then I think you really upgraded the offense that started the year kind of being bottom third, got into the middle of the pack, even for a while got into the top 10. I think if they these little extra additions can kind of move them solidly in the top 10 of offense, and then you have that elite pitching, man, they are going to be tough to deal with. And just that shot in the arm of getting Correa back, if you see, you know, Peña is expected to return in this first game against the Red Sox, and then if you see Yordan coming back in a couple weeks, man, look out. The other slightly thing that bothers me is, do they know something more about Yordan than we don't? Is that why they went and did this big move to get in Correa? Well, only the Astros front office guys really know that.
In terms of, we had pretty much said was obvious, Paredes is finished. Yeah. They'll get around to announcing he needs surgery on that hamstring or whatever. You know, they go out and they acquire two third basemen. Maybe going forward, Paredes is the first baseman, and they try to give away Walker and get out of some of that money in the offseason. But that's for another a day. Yeah, Yordan is the $19.166 million question prorated. Is he going to get back this season and matter?
Yeah, well, that's where I'm glad you brought that up, because that was where I wanted to go next, because that is the elephant in the room, is can Yordan make it back? And not just can he make it back, but can he be productive once he returns? Can he stay back? That has been a problem with this team as well, is getting guys back and keeping them back. And we know from past experience that Yordan on the hands can be sometimes a lingering effect with his game. If Yordan can't get back to where we expect him to be, which is to be one of the bigs best mashing the baseball, can this roster without Yordan, how far do you think they can get?
They can win it all, or they can go home before it starts. I mean, that is the spectrum and the way playoff baseball works, right? In 2022, Yordan didn't hit 200 for the postseason, but he had three of the biggest hits in Astros franchise history within that postseason. So it's not necessarily how many, but it's when you do it. The Astros played some of their best baseball last season after losing Kyle Tucker. Well, it wasn't cause and effect. They didn't get better because they lost Kyle Tucker. It just happened to work out that way. Yordan last season played his career high in games. And this year, you know, will he get to 30? However many played earlier this season, will there be an add-on? But if he comes back and Correa does rediscover his game and Sanchez improves them, right? Cam Smith finally had a decent game in the Washington series, but whether wearing down, the league's caught up to him. You can spot Sanchez in right field for him some. If the overall lineup is better, Yordan coming back, of course, if he's himself, he's their best force in the batter's box, but it won't feel like he has to be superhuman to give the Astros a chance.
Look, it's the Astros, Brandon. Who knows what's going to happen with Yordan? We don't know. If Dana's saying it's starting to sound good, like we're getting there, but we've been through this before. He has a setback, and then we start all over again. So bottom line, we just don't know. The one thing that may make people feel better, I see people in the comments thinking Correa's washed, and who knows? You may be right. We don't know. But for some positivity, over the last 30 days, he's slashing .308, .373, .421 with two homers and nine RBIs. That's in his last 30 games. So he's really turned it on over the last month. Hopefully, and Correa's kind of a streaky guy. Hopefully he can keep that going.
Well, I mean, two homers in 30 games doesn't excite. And one thing about Correa, as he struggled, we don't watch the Twins day in, day out, he's walking at the lowest rate in his career. So if he's lost a little bit of his plate discipline, if he resettles uncomfortably with the Astros, where will Espada place him in the lineup? Will it be behind Altuve? Will he act like it's Astros, good Astros Correa, and put him third or fourth and push down Walker, right? Yiner Diaz off a three-hit game. You know, are they going to try to go back to the future immediately with Correa, other than that he's at third base instead of shortstop? But hey, Peña in the leadoff spot, that's the start of lengthening your lineup, getting your best offensive player, Yordan excluded, back.
I mentioned the intangibles earlier that Carlos Correa brings with his game. But I think one of the intangibles that's interesting is the shot of adrenaline that perhaps this gives the team from an energy and enthusiasm standpoint. We saw something I think is comparable in acquisition in Justin Verlander in 2017, where the team had started to skid out. You know, they got off that big hot start, but then were just playing 500 ball. But then they got Verlander and they felt invigorated, like, oh, we can make a move now. What do you guys think this could do to this team, just from an intangible standpoint, to motivate and invigorate this current roster into believing?
I think there's reason to hope for it and buy into it some, but it can be a very overrated concept. Intangibles matter if they're in support of tangibles. If Correa comes here and has a 704 OPS and doesn't play real good third base, that he had big hits in the postseason in the past and he's a great leader. Look, very few of the present Astros ever played with Carlos Correa. So it's not like, oh, they're getting the whole band back together and all the vibes are back to 2017, 2019, 2021. And again, they won immediately after Correa left. So I don't think players on the roster are thinking, oh, our salvation, Carlos Correa is coming back. If he performs, then I think all that stuff falls very nicely into the narrative.
Yeah, I think it's star power, Brandon. That's something Correa brings, that this guy on the biggest stages has come through in the biggest moments. You've seen him telling the Dodgers to shut the bleep up. I'm like, this is a dude right here. And if he is right, it's going to make a big difference. I just think it's going to get Altuve more bought in. And Correa is better in big moments. If he's playing in big games that actually matter, trying to get down the stretch and make a playoff, you know, make an AL championship, I think he's better in those situations. I think the ballpark's going to help him too. Not only the familiarity of, I know we have our thoughts on the hitting coaches, but going back to guys that you're familiar with, I don't think that's such a bad thing. And that Crawford boxes, man, he's a right-handed hitter. I think there's plenty of opportunity to take advantage of that.
Charlie, Josh, final thoughts before we're out the door.
Look, if the Astros had done nothing, they could have said, hey, we're 4.5 games in first place. We chose not to act. Well, we could see how it would have played out, and maybe they'd have had I told you so. But Jim Crane, again, authorizes spending money going into the tax, which, again, it's not going to bankrupt the franchise value and all that. Astros attendance is on pace to be down 150,000 from what it was last year. Last year was down 200,000 from what it was in 2023. I think Jim Crane and the business side, baseball, connected to it, but that they could use a jolt. And the Astros' next home game, a week from Monday, Alex Bregman and the Boston Red Sox at Minute Maid Park. Whoops, Daikin Park, if we're going back to the future. Branding rename for one night. Daikin probably would get a little uptight about that. But it'll be Bregman and the Red Sox against Correa and the Astros.
I'd like to go back just quickly. A lot of the negative about Correa coming here is injury concerns, right? He's a player in his 30s. He's had injury concerns in the past. What makes me feel better about this is, do you guys remember when Correa was doing free agency and the medical reports from the Astros became like this big deal, like behind the scenes about like, oh, what are these medical records with the Astros with Correa's ankle from sliding into that bag in the minor leagues? And is that going to impact him going forward over the course of his career? Are there reasons we should stay away from Correa because of medical stuff that maybe the Astros are privy to? Well, the Astros decided to trade back for him. But the difference is here, they're not looking to sign him to a 10-year deal. You'd be a lot more concerned about nagging injuries if you're going to be locked into a guaranteed contract for a player for 10 years. But for only 3 years, not nearly as important. You're willing to roll the dice a little more. So the reason I'm saying this, it makes me feel good that the team that probably knows more about Carlos than any other team felt very comfortable with his medical records here and then whatever they could get from Minnesota. I know he had a concussion there and some other issues, but I feel good about that. That I don't think that Correa is going to come in here already broken down. I think he's going to be good to go. They just need to keep him healthy.
Easy on the massages.
Yeah.
For many reasons. Look, the talk about Jim Crane being cheap is dead. Chandler Rome's headline from the New York Times: Jim Crane cements his title as baseball's most aggressive owner. This guy has swung and swung big at the deadline time and time again. And we've said it on this show before that he is the best sports team owner Houston has ever seen. And beyond that, he's one of the best owners in baseball. And when we talk about enjoy this run of Astros supremacy and dominance and competitiveness and winning, at the core of all that is a man named Jim Crane. So shout out to you, Jim Crane. You the real MVP. Just a quick message that if you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, contact our friends on the sales team by visiting houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. One last reminder that if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts and apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Our next scheduled episode drops on Mondays, so make sure you subscribe to the channel with those notifications on. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.